Hi, everybody. I'm an Al-Anon from West Blockton, Alabama, and my name's Bo Templin. Good morning. Boy, what a great day and what a great weekend and what a great place to be. I'm telling you, my God is being good to me this weekend. when you've been here 35 and a half years and you're the youngster on the program, that tells you something about what's going on up here this weekend, and I'm just tickled to death to be here. I thank y'all for thinking enough of me and Charlie to allow us to share our stories with you. A couple of other thank yous that I need to get out of the way. If you're sitting in this room with me this morning and you're a member of AA, I want to say from the bottom of this Al-Anon's heart, thank you. I don't think we are doing that enough from Al-Anon anymore. When I came in September 4th, 1982, we told AA thank you on a real regular basis. And there just seems to be a little division that's coming, and but I'm not part of that division. I still remember where we came from. And I take every opportunity I get to say thank you to Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you basically for two reasons. Thank you, number one, for being there July 29th, 1982, when Shirley reached out her hand. And you had the hand of AA there for her. And you took her in and you put your arms around her and you loved her back to health. And she didn't have to die from a fatal disease that we didn't even know she had. How could I ever repay the debt of gratitude that I have? Because you see, the bottle had Shirley and I couldn't do anything about it. And when y'all got her, you turned her around and you made her into the lady that she is today. And I can never repay that debt of gratitude. But I said two reasons. The other reason is I want to thank AA for having this program ready for the family. Because in 1951, when Al-Anon was born, we asked AA, you said, can we have your 12 steps? And you said, yeah. You just threw your arms open wide and said, yeah, come on in. And here's what we want you to do, family member. We want you to take these 12 spiritual principles. Learn how to implement them in your life and learn how to live happy, joyous, and free, and then not be dependent on what another person does or does not do. And for that, I'll be eternally grateful. Now, when I introduce myself to you this morning, I introduce myself as an Al-Anon. I won't talk about that for just a minute. Oh, because see, when we got here, when I got here, Labor Day weekend, 1982, I thought being married to Shirley made me an Al-Anon. Now, what I learned pretty quickly after I got here was being married to Shirley qualifies me for Al-Anon. It doesn't make me an Al-Anon. And there are several things I do in my life today on a real regular basis in order to be able to stand up here this morning and tell you that I'm a member of Al-Anon. And I'm going to share two or three of those things with you. The first thing I do in order to tell you I'm a member of Al-Anon is I suit up and show up and occupy that chair in an Al-Anon meeting on a pretty regular basis. I know that this is a program of action. I know you can't get it by osmosis because I tried. The first 7 months that I was around this thing, not in it, but around it, I was suiting up and showing up, occupying that chair, rubbing up against you old-timers, you seasoned veterans that were here. I guess I was trying to get your recovery to rub off on me. And it took me 7 months before I had my moment of clarity. But let me explain it to you, because I know you see that this is a program of action. Let me explain it to you this way. I can take that chair and I can go out there on the back of Serenity Hill down there in West Blockton, and I can put that chair in the middle of the chicken coop, and I can sit down and occupy that chair in the middle of that chicken coop every day for 20 years. And guess what? That's right, I still won't be a chicken. But let me suggest this to you. If I occupy that chair in the middle of that chicken coop every day for 20 years, at the end of that time, I'm going to know a whole lot about chickens. And I'm going to know how the successful chickens are getting it done. So that's what I'm talking about. It was sitting in that chair watching you seasoned veterans, you winners that were already there for me, that I began to get an idea of what I was going to have to do if I wanted to be like you when I grew up. And I did that for 7 months, occupying that chair, taking up space in your room. And we'll talk about what happened at the end of 7 months in a little bit. But the first thing I have to do is I have to suit up, show up, and occupy that chair. Number two, remember, I'm just sharing with you what's worked for both. I have to have a sponsor. Now, I'm sorry whether I got that out of line. Let me back up. I have to have a home group. Now, my home group is the Wednesday discussion meeting in Bessemer, Alabama. We call it, the nickname of it is the Harmony Group, because if you show up on a good day when nobody's having any problems, you might find a little harmony there. Just maybe. Yeah. But when I got here, you see, I didn't need a home group. When I got here Labor Day weekend of 82, I didn't need Al-Anon. Because see, there was nothing wrong with me. I was convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that if Shirley didn't drink, we were going to be okay. Now, Al-Anon has a word that we use a lot called denial. AA has a little stronger word that they use called delusion. And that's where I was. I was living in a delusion that if she didn't drink, we were going to be okay. Because you see, I'd already figured it out that drinking was the problem. And so if she didn't drink, we were going to be okay. But that treatment center that Shirley went to up there in north of Birmingham, one of the greatest treatment centers in the world. You know what made it so great? It was staffed by recovered alcoholics. Yeah, staffed by people who had been there. And they had something up there called Family Week. Now they wanted me and Mike and Sissy. Mike was 15, Sissy was 13. They wanted all three of us to come up there for Family Week. That meant move into the family wing on Monday and stay there until Friday and go to the sessions and be a part of this thing. Now, I really didn't see a whole lot of need in me going, but I wanted to do everything I could to help her. Yeah. So that's why, because see, I was already now into the process of enabling her recovery. So we went up there to Family Week. Now they call it Family Week, I call it Hell Week. Because that's what it was. That's what it was. I went up there thinking that there was absolutely nothing wrong with me. Let me see if I can spill this. We got up there and they directed us down there to the family wing. We got down there and there was five families, going to be different families involved in Family Week. Group of people there, this lady with a big beautiful smile that was in charge of the family wing. And she welcomed us and she said, Sissy, I want you up at this end of the hall in the room of Miss So-and-so. Mike, I want you down at this end of the hall in the room with Mr. So-and-so. Nothing wrong with me now. I threw my hand up and I said, hold on just a minute. I said, I'm not so sure that I approve of this. So here you are putting my teenage kids in a room that they're going to share for a week with people that I know absolutely nothing about. And I'm not so sure I approve of that. And she just looked at me with that big smile and she said, oh, so Mr. Templin, it's not necessary that you approve of it. Said, you've got 15 minutes to be in this room and unpacked and in the group room for orientation. And that was my beginning of Hell Week. But a couple of things happened at Hell Week that have turned out to be absolutely very, very important in my life. The first thing I heard up there that really shook me is I heard one of the counselors make this statement. He said, you know, the ones that stay sober when they leave here are the ones that go to AA. And in the snap of your fingers, my job in life changed. Yeah. Yeah. See, I've already told you, I was convinced if she didn't drink, we were going to be okay. He just told me if she went to AA, she wouldn't drink. So my job became get her to AA. Then right before we left up there, I heard another one of the counselors say, it's a good idea to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. We did. And we lived in Hueytown at that time, a suburb of Birmingham, and there was plenty of meetings around. And Shirley and I started out on that trek of going to 90 meetings in 90 days. And so here's what we would do. It would be 7 o'clock, it's time to go to a meeting. We'd get in the car, the truck, whatever we had, and we'd go to a meeting. We'd get to the meeting, I'd walk in with her, and I'd take her down, and we'd sit out on the front row. That speaker would say something important, and I'd pop her with a mic. Well, did you hear that? I was listening real close. Because, see, I knew she was still foggy, and she was going to have questions when we got home, and I was going to have to answer them. So here we are, bouncing around, going to these 90 meetings in 90 days. And then the night came that we showed back up there at Bessemer for another meeting. Now, Bessemer, 7 months later, was to become my home group. But it wasn't my home group then, but we'd already been to a couple of meetings at Bessemer and all around the area. We showed up there at Bessemer and the guys met me at the door. I said, Bo, you can't come into this meeting tonight. I said, what do you mean? They said, it's a closed meeting for alcoholics only. I said, you're going to have to let Shirley come in this meeting. And you. I said, Bo, wait a minute, guys. Wait a minute. Y'all don't understand. It's my job. It's what I do. I said, you know, and they laughed and they said, no, I said, you got to turn Shirley over to us. And there's a meeting over there in that room that you need to go to. And you know what room they were pointing to the Al-Anon room. Now, I did not have old-time sponsorship at that time. Okay? And when I got old-time sponsorship, one of the first things that Jim and Fran told me was that from that point on, I would go to every meeting I went to at least 30 minutes early, prepared to stay until it was over. That's old-time sponsorship. Now, you know, they told me that a lot of AA and Al-Anon meetings are over in an hour, but not all of them are. And if there's still something to be done, if there's still somebody that needs some help, then at the Bessemer group, we stay until it's over, until it's done. And I can't tell you how many different times at 9 o'clock when everybody else was hugging necks and going out the door, there'd be one of us over there making another pot of coffee. Because there was somebody there, a newcomer there, or somebody that had a problem. And we weren't through. And that's the way we were brought into this thing. Let me tell you about getting there 30 minutes early. And if you're not doing that, I challenge each person in this room to start doing it. If you get there 30 minutes early, you get to chair a lot of meetings. Now, I don't mean get up front and get pick the topic and pick the reader. No, you get to help set up the chairs. You get the room ready for the meeting. If you get there 30 minutes early, you get to make a lot of coffee. Just exactly like you want it. You no longer have to bitch about the coffee. If you get there early and you make it. Yeah. But the biggest part about getting there early, if you get to these meetings 30 minutes early, you'll be there to be welcome that newcomer when they come through that door. Be one of the very first ones to welcome them to a new way of life. But I didn't have that kind of sponsorship at that night. And when they pointed me to that room, it was 3 minutes to eight for an 8 o'clock meeting. I got over there to the room. The door into the room is at the back of the room. I stopped, looked down through there, and took a quick head count. 23 women and one other guy. And he was down there on the front row, and the only empty seat in the room was right there beside him. So down to the front I go, and I sit down in that seat, and they're opening the meeting. And we get the meeting over and say the Lord's Prayer, and the guy turns to me and says, introduces himself. And he said, Hey, Bo, my name's Kervin. I said, well, Kervin, I'm glad there's at least one other guy here. And he started laughing, and two or three around him started laughing. He said, oh, Bo, he said, I'm moving to Panama City Beach in the morning. He said, this is my last meeting at Bessemer. And he wasn't lying. He ain't been back. 35 years. I don't think he's coming back. What I didn't know then was that was just God taking care of Bo. And I didn't think God even knew where I lived. Because see, I was so sick, it took all 23 of them gals from me. And if Kervin had been there and had a problem, I don't know what we'd have done. So anyhow, then one of the gals comes up to me and she introduces herself and I stick out my hand. She pushes my hand aside. She wants to hug my neck. See, I belong to the hugginest group in the southeastern United States. But I wasn't real huggable right then. And I didn't hug her. Then the second one came up, introduced herself. I stuck out my hand. She tried to push my hand aside, wanted to hug me. And then the third one came up. And she had watched what was happening. And she introduced herself and she said, Bo, come with me. And she took me to the back of the room, to the door. She took one of those chairs and she set it right inside that door. And she said, Bo, we want you to come back to every meeting that you will come to. And from now on, this is as far in this room as you have to come. This is designated as your chair. So you can come in and you can sit down in this chair. And you don't have to come down front and participate in the group or what we're doing. You just come in and sit down. What I realized years later, she was telling me, come on in here and sit down and shut up. Listen. She just, that's old time sponsorship. She didn't use those words, you know. And so they designated me that chair. Then they did something else that night. They assigned one of those gals to me. Now, we're an old group. My group was born in 61. And so we believe in doing things the old time way. So we believe in rotation. So this gal changed every month. And let me tell you what her job was. In order to do that, I'll tell you how we close our meetings at Bessemer. We close our meetings by making a circle, holding hands, and saying the Lord's Prayer. Now, we've not ever had any group conscious discussions or anything about changing that. That's what's worked for Al-Anon from the beginning, and that's what's going to be at Al-Anon in Bessemer from now on. Now, Jim Drysdale, who Jim and Fran were my first sponsors, and Jim Drysdale told me, that the Lord's Prayer ends with the word amen. Consequently, I'm not allowed to say anything after the word amen. See, Jim and Fran taught me to follow directions. Bo's perception or Bo's is not involved. I have to read the black writing on the white page and follow it explicitly. So what would happen is, I was raised in that Southern Baptist church, and I love the Lord's Prayer. And I'd come into that meeting, sit back there in my chair, and it'd be time to close the meeting. Well, I'd go down there and I'd get in the circle. Well, while I'm in the circle saying the Lord's Prayer, whoever was assigned to me that month would slip out of the circle and go back there and get between me and the door. This is old time stuff now. And when we said amen and I dropped, I headed for the door, and I said, oh my goodness. I can hug one to get out of this room, or I can hang around and hug 23. And I'd hug that one. Those gals started teaching me to hug without her telling me they were teaching me to hug. Because every time they would hug my neck, they would whisper in my ear. They'd say, Bo, you keep coming back because we need you. I wanted to help. And if you needed me, I'd be glad to do that. So that was the first hook that those gals there in Bessemer began to use on me to keep me here until my miracle could happen. You see, I totally believe in hugs today. I believe that there's a spiritual healing in the hugs that we share in our fellowship. And I believe that because I've experienced it. I know that it's real. So that was the first hook. The second hook that those gals began to use on me was a hook called laughter. See, I didn't have a whole lot of laughter when I got here. I don't know about you, but there wasn't a whole lot funny in my life going on. But they began to show me real, true laughter. Not the kind I brought here, you know. not the kind that hurts your teeth. I'm talking about the kind that comes from down here. That first meeting I was in that night had one of our seasoned veterans that was telling her story. And she got up in front of everybody and they introduced her and she said, Hi, my name's Doris, and it's been 14 years since I had to plan a murder. And the whole room erupted in laughter. Everybody except me. I didn't laugh. I was sitting there on that front row with old Kirvin, and to myself I said, you'll never hear me say that out loud. Because I was just like her and most of the people in this room here. Yeah, I'd been planning that murder too. I was going to kill Shirley and tell God she died. But before I left that meeting that night, I knew that nobody was laughing at Doris. Everybody was laughing with Doris. And laughter today has become one of the most important things in my recovery. Because you see, I believe today that laughter is one of the first signs of recovery. Give you something to start doing. Watch that newcomer when they come in. They ain't laughing. Give them hugs. Give them love. Do anything you can to get them to keep coming back to meetings. And then while they're in the meetings, give them something to take home with them. Give them some recovery. Show them some recovery. And before long, that frown will go away. And before you know it, they'll start smiling. And when I watch them today and when they start smiling, I very quietly, I just say, hey, God, thank you. See, I got a God that loves me so much that he performs miracles in my life on a regular basis. But God not only performs them in my life, God's given me open ears and open heart, and he allows me to see miracles that are going on around me. And I enjoy those too. And one of the biggest miracles I see is when the newcomer starts laughing. You know they're on the road to recovery then. One more hook that they use, and then we'll move on. That's a hook called unconditional love. Those gals started covering me up with unconditional love that very first night. I didn't understand it. I just knew that it was different from the way I'd been living. Because, see, they never asked anything of me. They were always there to give to me. I show up for the meeting, I wouldn't be there 2 minutes till there's one of them Al-Anons giving me a hug and welcoming me to the meeting and telling me how glad they were that I was there and asking me, do you need anything? Have you got any questions? Is there anything I can do for you? And I kept waiting on them to come up with what I needed to do, and it never came up. And then we went to a meeting one night, and the topic was unconditional love. And then I got a better handle on it, and I realized what was happening to me. And so I didn't tell you, but I self-appointed myself. I was going to be the king of sopping up unconditional love in the southeastern United States, because I liked it. And, of course, being a good, an aspiring Al-Anon, my... The next thought that went through my mind was, well, if you're going to be so good at sopping it up, how good are you going to be at giving it away? And so I set out to learn how's the best way to give away unconditional love. And I began to go around, and I was going to get this information from you seasoned veterans. Notice I'm not saying old timers anymore. Now that I'm becoming one, I like seasoned veterans better. And we'd go to these things like this, anniversaries. I'd immediately seek out the seasoned veterans, and I'd go up to them and start talking to them and asking them questions. And I was trying to get a real good handle on this thing called unconditional love. And I got an invitation to come and speak at the spring roundup in San Diego, California. And got out there and realized that the Friday night speaker, AA speaker, that was opening the conference was a man that that I had grown to really admire and really think a lot of through cassette tapes, listening to his cassette tapes. And I'd never met him. And I said, buddy, I'm going to be on the front row when he talks Friday night. So Friday night, I'm sitting right there on the front row, and he gets up there and starts talking. Then he says, I want to stop just a minute and talk about something that I usually don't talk about. And he said, I want to talk about the most important thing in my life today. And I perked up, and of course, my keen Al-Anon mind, I was way ahead of him. I said, well, hell, that's his recovery. He was sober over 30 years at that time. I said, that's got to be his recovery. Well, it wasn't. And it wasn't his job, and it wasn't his family. He said, the most important thing to me in my life today is my relationship with God. And my ears perked up. And he said, I want to tell you a little bit about my relationship with God. He said, I call my relationship with God the vertical. And I call my relationship with you the horizontal. And what I've learned in the past 30 years is that as long as I'm okay vertically, I'm okay horizontally. As long as I'm spiritually fit, I don't have any problems with you. And when I do begin to have problems with you or it or them, I no longer have to come to you or it or them. I go to my sponsor. And I said, sponsor, let's sit down, let's read, let's talk, let's pray. I'm out of kilter spiritually. Something's wrong. And let's help me get back on the right track. And he said, it works 100% of the time. When we get me back square spiritually, then whatever it was that was going out here, it just goes away. It wasn't that big. So he said, I start out every day of my life with a conversation with God. And he said, and I said, God, this is Bo. What I want to do, God, is I want you to come in and I want you to take over my life today. Just today. And I want you to run my life today. And I want you to make me the best child of God that I can be today. And he said, so I start my day off with, I fire Bo and I hire God. And I do that every morning. And as long as I stay spiritually fit, then God can use me as a channel of his love. Because you see, when I'm spiritually fit, God loves you through me. When you're spiritually fit, God loves me through you. And then he closed that by saying, oh, and by the way, God's love is unconditional. And he gave me the answer. I no longer have to run around all over the United States and Canada trying to figure out how to be the best at giving away unconditional love. All I got to do is be the best child of God I can be wherever I am on a daily basis. That ain't a bad deal for a guy to come here 35 years ago to learn how to keep Shirley sober. That's all I was after. Look what's been given to me. You know, the next thing I do is I take those 12 steps that Elizabeth read up here. 12 simple steps for a very complicated person. And I incorporate them in my life on a daily basis. Being the best child of God that I can be. The last thing I do is I'm sponsored. I've already talked about sponsorship to you some. We'll talk a little more about it. I believe scholarship today is one of the most talked about and least utilized thing in our fellowship. Such a shame that old time sponsorship's not around as much as it's still around, but not as much as it used to be. Because you see, when I finally had my moment of clarity and I asked Fran, Kervin wasn't around. There wasn't any guys. And I'll talk to you about Fran again in just a minute. But Fran agreed to sponsor me on one condition. And I said, what's that? And she said, I'll sponsor you the way I was sponsored, in the steps. And what she told me was, my primary responsibility to you as your sponsor is to take you through this 12-step program. And if you're willing to commit to me that you're ready to do that, then I'm ready to take you by the hand and walk with you. Yeah. Well, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time talking about how it was, because I think I'm in a room with a room full of experts on how it was. What I'd like to talk to you the rest of my little time here is about how it's been on the spiritual journey. And I want to start with September the 4th, 1982, because that's the Saturday that we picked Shirley up at the treatment center. And I still had not let go of that anger, you know, because I hadn't done any work on Bo. I'd just been hanging around. I got up there and I got in another argument with the treatment center before we even left the property. First thing I told them when I got up there, I said, how in the world can y'all do something like this? They looked at me funny. Said, what are you talking about? I said, I guess the insurance ran out, didn't it? How can you let my wife out of treatment center on the biggest drinking weekend of the year? Couldn't you keep her till Monday or Tuesday? And they just laughed at me, you know, and they They said, here's, Bowie, we've got directions for you. Your directions are you and Mike and Sissy take Shirley and go straight to the Bessemer AA group in Bessemer, Alabama. They have their own building. Do you know where it is? I said, yes, sir, I know where it is. They knew I knew because, you see, I had an aunt and uncle down there that both had 20 years of sobriety at that time. And they knew where they were sending us. See, they, being recovered people themselves, they knew my aunt and uncle. And they knew what was at the Bessemer group. They didn't have to look in a book and get an address. They knew. And they said, you are not allowed to go by your house. You got to go straight to Bessemer and you got to meet up with them because y'all are going to be going to Tuscaloosa, Alabama to an AA Al-Anon anniversary. So off to Bessemer we go. We get down there, and let me tell you about Labor Day weekend in Bessemer, Alabama. It's hot and it's humid. And all I can tell you is the story grows as it goes. I'm up now to where we had, I believe it was about 85 vehicles. And we was forming a convoy to go to Tuscaloosa. Uncle James seemed to be the guru down there. He was getting everything lined up. Wish you could have seen it. We had two doors, we had four doors, we had station wagons, we had wreckers, we had pickup trucks with and without camper shells, we had motorcycles, we had everything that you could think of. And every one of them was a drunk vehicle. By that I mean there wasn't a straight piece of sheet metal nowhere. Not a one of them had an air conditioner at work. And so Uncle James told me and Shirley and Mike and Sissy, said, y'all just stand right over here. Y'all gonna be riding down there with me and Aunt Katie. And so then he looked at everybody else and said, all right, let's start loading up. I kind of got in front of Shirley and the kids. I said, this is going to be the biggest fight you've ever seen. I go, we had enough people for 105 cars. But you know what? They started rolling windows down. They started piling people in on top of each other, arms and legs sticking out windows, everybody laughing and cutting up, nobody getting mad. And off to Tuscaloosa we go. Oh. That probably won't make any difference to you, but it was real comical to me. At that time, they had just finished the interstate between Bessemer and Tuscaloosa. And halfway between Bessemer and Tuscaloosa was a rest area. Now, most of those people in that convoy had never seen a rest area, had never been in one. So when we got, Uncle James leading the way, so when we got to the rest area, he pulls in there. And all 100 of us have to unload. Everybody has to go to the bathroom and get a drink of water. Back then, they gave away free maps. Everybody come out of there with a free map. I just thought that was hilarious. And we load back up and off we go to the University of Alabama, because that's where Tuscaloosa held their anniversary each year. And we unloaded down there and we walked into a room, and depending on who's telling the story, there was somewhere between 500 and 750 people. And every one of them was dressed up, cleaned up, had on fufu juice, running around there laughing and hugging each other, having the time of their life. And there was a big table over to the side, and there was a bunch of teenagers over there. And Mike immediately wanted to know, was that young drunks? And it wasn't, it was Alateens. And so this is what God did for me and Shirley that night. We had a male Al-Anon speaker. Yeah. I can't tell you today who he was, where he was from. Don't remember a word he said. See, I wasn't there about me. we had a female AA speaker. And I today could, from that point on, could pretty well tell you her story. Got to know her real well. Dirk knows who I'm talking about. Today, 35 years later, that's my wife's sponsor. And it started right there that night at the Tuscaloosa anniversary. And that was our introduction to this way of life. We got home at night, and the kids had Shirley a 2-pound bag of chocolate chip cookies because they wouldn't let her have that at the treatment center. And we had a gallon of milk. And we got home about midnight, and we sat there in the floor, and we talked about y'all. We talked about what we had seen, that thing about attraction rather than promotion. Started right there that night. We talked about you till the sun came up. Now, I know we talked about you till the sun came up because I watched the sun come up. And what's important about that is the curtains were now open and the front door was open. We no longer had the curtains pulled. We no longer kept you outside from the very beginning. We asked the kids to go to those four Alateen meetings. And we'd talk with them. We didn't force them. They went to their four meetings. Like Shirley told you, Sissy fell in love with it. She was 13 and she had found her place. She stayed till she came into Al-Anon at 20. And she's 49 years old today with 35 plus years of Alateen and Al-Anon. Still an active member of Al-Anon today. Mike went to his four meetings and said, it's not for me. But that was okay because, you see, Mike was living in a home now where spiritual principles were being practiced. And if you're going to live in a home where spiritual principles were practiced, then your life's going to change. And the best way I know to tell you about that is Mike thought a lot of Sissy's Alateen participation, even though he was 2 years older than her. He came in from school one day, said, Sissy, get your book and come to my room. I need to talk to you about something. So she got her book, off to his bedroom they went. Shirley said they was in there about an hour and a half. They come out and she looked at Mike. She said, Mike, what was that about? He says, a closed meeting, Mom. And our lives began to get a little bit better financially. We began to recover a little bit. Then 7 months, I had my moment of clarity. It was a Saturday morning. I was supposed to play golf. And it was raining so hard you couldn't see the driveway. And I'm sitting in the den with a cup of coffee and I'm hollering at God. What's the deal, God? I'm getting her to meetings. I'm doing all the stuff I'm supposed to be doing. All I want to do is play a round of golf. Can't it rain on Wednesday? And Shirley just stood there till I was through. And I took a deep breath. And she said, well, are you through? And I said, yeah. She said, well, who are you going to blame this one on, Bo? I haven't had a drink in 7 months. And it was clear that this was not about her. It was about me. So I went back to my Al-Anon group. Like I say, Kervin was gone. There was a lady there named Fran, and a bunch of people in this room knew and loved Fran and Jim Drysdale. I asked Fran. I'd sat in enough meetings with Fran that I knew she had the information I needed. I knew that. So I asked her if she would help me, and she said she would. She was a retired school principal, and there was a disciplinarian side to her that I didn't know existed till I invited her in to be my sponsor. So anyhow, we got started. She told me it would be in the steps, and we got started in the steps. It wasn't too long till we both knew that there were some things I needed to talk to a man about. So she sent me out into the AA room. She said, "You pick you a man out there that's working a good 12-step program, and we'll make him part of this relationship." Well, I just happened to pick the one she'd been married to forever. And Jim and Fran became my mentors and my guides. And see, God was taking care of me then, because God gave me the best of AA and the best of Al-Anon, because he knew just how sick I was. And he knew he was going to take everything he could offer me. And after about 3 months of puddling along there, I decided I needed to write an inventory. Now, the thing I forgot was I forgot to tell Jim and Fran, and I forgot to ask them for direction. And I was having all kind of trouble. And I was one of those sponsees or pigeons that I didn't call till I'd run it in the ditch. And so I finally, it was in the ditch, and I called Fran, and I was just babbling. And she said, "Well, this sounds like a 5:30 meeting." Now, a 5:30 meeting I was not allowed to miss. And a 5:30 meeting happened at Jim and Fran's kitchen table. And Fran would have the coffee made. I had to be there prior to 5:30 because that's when Jim got home from work. And we would have our meeting there at the kitchen table. So I got over there that afternoon, got my coffee. Jim comes walking. Jim didn't know it was happening. He comes walking in, sees me, and said, "Uh-oh, what's going on?" And I said, "Well, Jim, I'm having all kind of trouble. I'm trying to write an inventory, and I just can't get it written." And Fran spoke up. She said, "Is that what your problem is? Is that what you called me about?" I said, "Yes, ma'am." She said, "Bo, if you're trying to do a four-step, you got to be in trouble, because you ain't through with the third step." And she said, "And I've been telling you since the beginning that these things are numbered for dummies like you." And Jim just said, "Come on with me." And we left Fran there at the table. We went back to his office and sat down at his desk. And he reached around there and he got a book, brought it around there and put it in front of us. And it was the Big Book of AA. I'm an Al-Anon that believes wholeheartedly in the textbook Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't apologize or I don't back up from that. That's where we came from. So he brought that book around there and he put it between us, and he opened it up to the chapter to the agnostic. And he said, "Let me tell you," he said, "the way I see it, Bo," he said, "you're going to have to do something about your concept of God." He said, "You were born and raised in that Southern Baptist church, and," he said, "it's not their fault, but for some reason, your concept of God is he's a very judging and very punishing God. And you're not about to get involved with a God that you think is going to be judging you and punishing you." So he took me into the chapter to the agnostic, and it was right there in that chapter in that book that day that I found the God that I have in my life today. And it's a God of infinite power and of infinite love. You know, I can't even put my arms around infinite. I don't know, it's so much, but never ending, inexhaustible power and love. And I know today that the God I have in my life today is so busy loving me and forgiving me that he wouldn't have time to judge me and punish me if he wanted to. So now I've got this new concept of God, and I'm off and running just as hard as I could away from him. Because you see, in that Southern Baptist church, when you turned it over to God, they made you a song director or a Sunday school teacher. And I knew I couldn't sing, so I couldn't be a choir director. And God loved me so much then, he loves me this much now, but he loved me so much then that he allowed me to run just as hard as I wanted to run and get just as sick as I needed to get. And every time I do that, when I get so sick that I can't stand it anymore, when I turn around and turn it back over to God, He's there in a snap of a finger to take it back away and to take the pain away. That's the way God works with me today. You see, God has never, ever taken away my will. I have to give my will to Him. He won't come in and take it. He just doesn't. My God doesn't go places that He's not comfortable, that He's not wanted. And there I am. I'm running and running, and finally I get so sick I can't stand it. I pull off the side of the road one Wednesday morning on the way to work, miserable. Finally decided I'd go to work and be miserable and get paid there. But I couldn't make it to work. And I beat on the steering wheel. And I hollered at God. And I said, God, please come in here and take this away from me. Whatever it is that I've got to do, wherever you got for me to go, whatever it is, God, let's get it on. Because I can't fight you anymore. And I surrendered. I surrendered. And my life began to really, really get better. Now, it hadn't all been peaches and cream since then. Shirley already told you last night. 5.5 years into this thing, we lost Mike, who was 20 and a half years old. We lost him to a drunk driver. And we share that with you because, number one, Mike's part of our life. And that's part of our story. But just as importantly, I share it with you because I want to share with you the part you played in it, which is vitally important. Within 45 minutes of us getting the news of Mike's death, AA and Al-Anon was in our home. Yeah. I didn't call my mother or my brother until later. I called Fran. I told Fran what had happened. She said, Jim and I'll be there right away. And, you know, when we gather together in rooms like this, and we're having a meeting, We generate a spiritual power. But these 12 steps that Elizabeth read, it's just 12 steps on a page. 12 steps in the clubhouse on the wall is just 12 steps on the wall. Let me tell you something, folks. 12 steps in action is something to behold. And that's what we got to experience as a result of Mike's death. Because you see, we got to experience the depth of the power of our fellowship. Because y'all were there. Y'all were there. The family came. They had to go home and get their kids off to school. Baptist Church came, dropped off some fried chicken and tater salad. Y'all came and stayed. Y'all came and stayed. And you see, you took care of us because we were in a stupor. You made decisions for us because we weren't capable. And you made good decisions. That Shirley told you we were going up to Washington, D.C. to visit her aunt and uncle. He was deacon in Southern Baptist Church up there in Silver Spring, Maryland. And of course, as soon as he heard about Mike in the car, came straight to us. Sunday, that was on Wednesday when he came. Sunday, when he got ready to go home, he looked at me and Shirley and he said, I don't know enough about this AA and Al-Anon thing. All I know is that you two are right where you belong. Don't move. He said, I've sat in your living room for 4 days and I've watched these people come and I've watched them go and I've watched them take care of y'all. And he said, and I felt closer to God the last 4 days than I've ever felt in my church. He said, stay right where you are. Stay right where you are. And that's what we've made every effort to do since then. Some things I'm going to have to leave out because I've gotten long-winded up here. But Sissy, Well, Shirley and I, really. Shirley and I had to make walk through the longest, darkest tunnel that we'll ever have to walk through as a parent. Oh, there might be something happening to Sissy, and that tunnel would be just as long and just as dark. But it wouldn't be any longer or any darker. I've already walked through the longest, darkest tunnel that a parent will ever have to walk through. The beautiful part about it is that I never took a step of that journey alone. You see, I was incapable. Every step of the way, you had this hand, and God had this hand. And we walked through that tunnel. So I want to share something with you that I know beyond a shadow of a doubt today. I don't believe this. I don't think this. I know this from my own experience. There's absolutely nothing that thing called the world out there can throw at me today that I can't walk through as long as you got this hand and God's got this hand. Because folks, when you got this hand and God's got this hand, both got the power. Both got the power. That's the reason you still see us going to a lot of meetings. That's the reason you see us staying in the middle of you. See, when something happens to us today, and a couple of things have that are scary, we don't run from you anymore. We run to you. We run to you, and we get right in the middle of you. We're not on the edge. We get right in the middle of you because we know we'll be protected there. We know that. See, I used to worry about, was Shirley going to drink when Mike got killed by a drunk driver? I thought that if there ever was a reason. But she didn't. She didn't. It was some time later that I realized the reason that my wife didn't drink during that process. She didn't drink because she was spiritually fit. Yeah. And when that happened, God came down and put a shield around her, and alcohol could not penetrate that shield. That's what this is about. I didn't have to load that shotgun. Jim Drysdale walked in there and said, "Give me your shotgun. And don't me ask me back for it. I'll tell you when you can have it back." Yeah. And that's the kind of direction we had when we walked through this. Sissy met old Bob, her shining arm, knight in shining armor. I'd always told her, "Sissy, whenever he comes along, whoever he is, tell him don't come to me getting on his knee, asking for your hand. Tell him to come to me with a financial statement." Well, when I heard that it was Bob, I knew Bob. I said, "Well, forget that." So Sissy and Bob got married, and then we moved out into the country, out on Serenity Hill. Absolutely one of the best things we've ever done in our life. Spook came along and adopted us, that black lab. We lost her last November. We miss her so much, even today. But even in her death, this is the kind of pet that she was. She disappeared from us and was missing for 4 days. And she went off out in the woods and curled up, and she took care of her death by herself. She didn't put us through the anguish. That's just God looking down and taking care of the deal. That's all that is. She's got a grave. We got three crosses there on the property on Serenity Hill. She's got her grave right there at the base of the middle cross, and sitting on top of it is it's about this high, black lab. That's her marker sitting right there. So I got a little bit of time. Okay. February 2015, I tried to die. I did my best to die. And God wasn't ready for me. And I didn't die. When I got to the emergency room, I had double pneumonia, and I had intestinal flu and a blood sugar of 650. And I was turning blue. And they got me into ICU, and I stayed in ICU for 4 or 5 days. And I was delusional, then not delusional. Delusional, then not. I was taking these trips. Trips. And one of the trips that I took turned out to be worth the whole thing that I had to go through. Because on one of these trips, I found myself in this place where it was like chocolate, and it was like the chocolate was turning. It was, you know, like they were mixing. And I couldn't see beyond it or around it, and it was cold, ice cold, and I was scared. And I said, God, I'm scared to death. I don't know what this is. If this is the end, let's go ahead and do it. I'm ready. I'm prepared. I'm not real willing right now, but that's your call. But I said, God, you got to give me some help. I can't stay here in this. I can't do it. And immediately it was just like a kaleidoscope. If you've ever fooled with a kaleidoscope, it starts out with a little bitty pinhole in the center, then it gets bigger and bigger. Well, there was a kaleidoscope in that chocolate, and it began to go round and round and make the circle bigger and bigger. And as it took away the chocolate, it revealed the most beautiful blue sky that you've ever seen. And when it got through, there was 3 or 4 wispy white clouds, and it was warm, and I was comfortable. I never heard God speak in words, but the message that God sent to me was, I ain't through with you. That ain't what this is about. I got more work for you to do. Now you get back in there and get well and get out there. And when I got out of there and out of the hospital, I had a talk with God. And I said, you know, God, years ago, I made a deal with you that I'd do whatever you told me to do and go wherever you told me to go. And I left the schedule up to you because I had a job. I said, God, I'm reporting back in. I don't have a job anymore. I'm available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And all I can tell you is, don't talk to God in those terms unless you're ready to get busy. We have been busier the last 3 years of our life than we have ever been. Shirley's dealing with her polycystic kidneys. And the doctor is so proud of her. She is doing, and I'm so proud of her. She is following directions and doing so good. And so far, she's ahead of the game with this thing. We've even found out that if and when the day comes for dialysis, that we'll be able to do it right there. And that's how far they've come with dialysis. And Shirley looked at him and says, yeah, but we travel a lot. And he said, do you know anybody that has a CPAP machine that uses it? I said, yeah. He said, well, that's about the size of it. And he said, you just don't check it in your luggage, carry it on with you. When you get in your hotel room, hook it up. Freedom. Freedom. And the freedom, because number one, because we're willing to follow directions. And that's what we got here. Good, orderly direction. So that's where our life is today. We're so grateful to be up here this weekend. This is a recharge that will keep us going for a while. So I'm going to close this talk like I've closed my talks before, and especially with some people in this room, so I know it works. And I'm going to close it by making a deal with you. I'm one of those Al-Anons that's never seen the burning bush or the flash of light. But the God that I have in my life today, we talk with each other more today than we ever have in my life. And that's so important that you be a part of that. Because you see, when God speaks to me today, most time it usually looks and sounds a whole lot like you. You are my channel. So now that you know how important you are, here's the deal. I'm going to keep coming back. Rooms like this full of folks like you. Now you're part of the deals. I want you to keep coming back. Room full of folks like us. Now, if I keep coming back and you keep coming back, then one day our paths will cross again as we trudge this road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you so much, Doctor.